Welcome to the Remote Tech People podcast. As more teams move to a remote-first work environment, we'll be interviewing leaders to share their insights, challenges, and advice in making their transition. We believe in the many benefits of a remote-first workplace for technology professionals and are keen to share advice in making remote-first a success. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Welcome to the first episode of Remote Tech People, the podcast. Today's episode, we've got Brendan Yell, who's the director of Twilio Startups. Welcome, Brendan.
Hi, James. Great to be with you.
Good to hear, mate. Good to hear. Mate, we're not actually located all that far from each other, but we are doing this remotely, which is the world we're living in, and everything's going more and more remote, which is obviously the podcast today. But, mate, for those of the listeners that don't know who you are, mate, can you give us a bit of an overview of, you know, who is Brendan Yell and you're currently working on?
Yeah, sure. So I currently work for a US-based tech company called Twilio. Twilio allows you to bolt in things like SMS and voice and email into the apps and websites that you build. And I run their startup program. So we're a really small team. There's just three of us globally. And we're globally distributed in New York, London. And I suppose I'm technically sort of based out of Sydney.
Yeah, fantastic, mate, fantastic. And Twilio, obviously, much bigger organization as well. Three-person team in your team, but Twilio as an organization, I understand you guys are gone fully remote as well?
Yeah, so look, we're approaching 5,000 employees. And during COVID that you build, and I run their startup program. So we're a really small team. There's just three of us globally, and we're globally distributed in New York, London, and I suppose I'm technically sort of based out of Sydney.
Yeah, fantastic, mate, fantastic. And Twilio, obviously, much bigger organization as well. Three-person team in your team, but Twilio as an organization, I understand you guys are gone fully remote as well?
Yeah, so look, we're approaching 5,000 employees. And during COVID, the decision was made that the company would actually go fully remote. In fact, Twilio was heading that direction already. And the reason we were heading that direction already is obviously being a San Francisco-based tech company. Talent is expensive in San Francisco. Like, it's crazy. Like, just the offers that people get, that people turn down, like the money. Obviously, then that means the rents are expensive. So kind of, you know, getting and keeping talent in San Francisco is kind of impossible. So for us to keep growing at the rate where you can't do that only based in San Francisco. And while we had sort of other offices around the world, you know, Singapore, London, New York, some of those markets had those challenges as well. So for us to really attract and retain the best talent, remote seemed to be the way to go. And I suppose COVID was a great trial to see, you know, could we be more productive in a remote way, or were we less productive by not being in the office every day?
Yeah, mate, I think COVID, as you said, it's fast-tracked that for a lot of people, forced people into it. I believe it's probably fast-tracked that the remote work by 10 years. I think we're eventually going to get to this stage, but for the vast majority of companies, we wouldn't have got here anywhere near as quickly, except for being forced to prove that it can work. And now, you know, the conversations as we're coming out of COVID in some parts around the world is, hey, are people going to go back to the office? What's the benefits of that? We've proven we can work remotely. And companies that are trying to get people back in the office are facing challenges.
Yeah, look, COVID has accelerated all forms of digital transformation, of which, you know, remote work is kind of one of them. You know, it was only a couple of years ago, I was telling someone that QR codes are dead. It's, you know, it's terrible technology. It's hard to use. And you know, now my mother, who's in her senior years, has no problem using a QR code. My 10-year-old was on a Zoom call this morning. So I agree with you. It was going to happen anyway, but it's really kind of accelerated that. I think what's interesting for our team, and our job is really to get around and work with startups, is that we're actually doing a better job doing it remotely. I used to spend way too much time in airports, way too much time on planes, way too much time exhausted and tired, feeling that I needed to go and have cups of coffee with these people, with these startups. Now I jump on Zoom calls with them, and we actually are doing a much better job. And we're servicing startups, not only in San Francisco and New York and in Sydney, but also companies in Vietnam, Malaysia, and India, and places that we wouldn't get to as often. So, you know, if I look at it, us being a remote team, we're actually doing a better job serving startups, which is what our job as a team is to do.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I think obviously remote, different for each company. There's a lot of benefits that have come to play. You mentioned earlier on that war for talent. For companies that are forcing people back or looking at a hybrid approach or let's call it a flexible approach, a couple of days in the office, a couple of days out, how do you feel they will stack up to a fully remote offering from other companies? Do you think they've got any chance of attracting talent?
Yeah, look, that's a tough one. I think, you know, there's been some pretty high profile cases like Apple last year when they told all of their highly paid employees that they had to come back to the office, and there was a massive kind of resistance to that. It's going to be interesting to see. I think the hybrid model is definitely one that will be employed, where you don't need to be in there 5 days a week, but 1 or 2 days a fortnight probably makes sense. There is an aspect of remote work that, you know, you miss forming those bonds and friendships with people you work with. Because, you know, I think that when in a team environment, if you actually considered your colleagues friends and not just colleagues, I think there's a lot of advantages in that. So, you know, either you bring those people in 1 or 2 days a fortnight for them to connect and hang out, or you do kind of regular kind of team meetups. Companies like, you know, Buffer and Stripe that are kind of also fully remote, they're pretty well renowned for having, I think Buffer will meet in Bali once a year and get together and hang out and build those kind of friendships and those bonds. So that, I think that's something that is probably missing from remote work. I suppose I've been doing it for a long time, so I'm kind of used to it. And I think some of those challenges, I probably don't think about it for people that have just happened to transition into remote work. But there's a lot of upsides from remote work. I mean, the main one is obviously that you don't have to spend, you know, an hour or two of your time every day, you know, commuting, whether that be driving in or sitting on a train or on a bus. And funny enough, I had to drive 40 minutes somewhere the other day, and I was really sitting there going, wow, this takes a long time. Like, there's a large chunk of my day, 40 minutes there and 40 minutes back. So, you know, I think that aspect of it is a real advantage. And then that gives you some flexibility to hopefully keep a really nice work-life balance.
Yeah, I think that culture piece is a big piece. I think companies that had moved to remote before COVID and had put things in place, put structures in place, whether it be those regular meetups or the big gatherings, companies that were prepared for that and have got those things in place have had success. And companies that have moved to remote because of COVID and had to do it reactively maybe don't have those cultural pieces in place yet and trying to reactively come up to speed with that. That's where they may face challenges. But I agree. I think over time, this remote work is here to stay, and the cultural piece will be figured out. There's more and more organizations and, you know, SaaS-based companies that are trying to fill that gap where building culture remotely is a thing. And I think that is definitely a space that will continue to grow.
Yeah, I think for some of those companies that have had, like, where the transition has been more forced due to COVID, they may not also have the tools set up. So it takes a while to learn how to use these, you know, different kind of tools effectively, you know, be it Zoom or be it, you know, Slack or, you know, I think these different tools, it takes a while to learn how to use them effectively, especially when it's not always synchronous. So sometimes you've got people out of time zones. So we certainly took us a while to get used to using Slack correctly in a way, because for some people it's live chat and for other people they're waking up in the morning and they're viewing these kind of threads of messages. So yeah, I think there's some rules of engagement that I think you need to decide as a company. When is it appropriate to respond to messages? When is it not? I think probably the hardest thing about the switch to remote work is that blurred lines between when you're working and when you're not. I mean, that's an advantage, right? So for me, not having to go in an office, I can go to my, you know, I can take my kids to school. I can pick them up in the afternoon. I can go to their different school events. But then does that mean that I then will be answering messages at 9 and 10 at night or, you know, on a Saturday morning? So I think you have to kind of figure out those rules of engagement. One of the things that Twilio put in pretty early into COVID was no meeting Fridays. So no Zoom calls on Fridays, which is a little tricky for me because on Friday mornings, it's Thursday afternoon in the US. So I kind of had to sort of switch mine to be no Zoom calls on Friday afternoons and none on Monday morning. So I think everyone has to figure out their own rules of engagement for when is it appropriate to respond, because the first 4 months, quite a lot of our workers that weren't used to remote work actually were getting burnt out. They had not only Zoom fatigue, but just general fatigue because they didn't know how to switch on and switch off. They hadn't been kind of used to that, figuring out that kind of routine in their lives.
Yeah, I agree. I think A, Zoom fatigue is a real thing, and then B, that blurring of lines between work and you don't get up, leave your office desk and drive home. You're normally standing up and walking to the next room, and very easy to, hey, I'll sit at my computer for an extra half hour, hour, and whatever that might be. So I feel like those are very real challenges for individuals to adapt to. On that note, you've obviously been doing it for much longer than most of us. What's a daily routine look like for you? And I know each day would change, time to time, but do you have a reasonable structure that you try to keep to?
Yeah, I usually like to get to the coffee shop in the morning, and I just take my notepad and sort of write out the list of things that I want to get done that day. So I don't do any actual work. I just use that time as a bit of time for me and a time to kind of to plan the day out. I try not to have any Zoom calls in afternoons. So mid-mornings and mornings is when I do the calls. It's rare that I'd have an afternoon call. The afternoons are really for kind of getting real work done. I think that if your day is constantly interrupted by Zoom calls, it's very hard to get some of the real work, the productive work done. And I think interruptions, like one of the plus sides of not going into office is I think there can be reduced distractions. I actually find an office environment very distracting. I think we're all naturally social beings, and Susie's talking about what she did on the weekend, and John's talking about the barbecue he's going to have that evening. Like, there's a lot of kind of distractions and discussions. Of course, there can be a ton of distractions at home as well, whether that can be, kids running into your office, or just lawns need mowing or whatever. Like, you have to kind of, I think, figure out when is work time and when is not. I do find myself constantly saying to the family, guys, I can't actually do that. It's a normal work day for me. I have to, commit my hours. But yeah, I've been doing it for a while, and I think it's a great trade-off. I think that flexibility that you can have with your personal life, your family and work life, I think it's a great trade-off, and I love it.
I completely agree. Mate, you mentioned a point earlier, which is quite contentious. I know it's been a bit of a bigger conversation in the US in particular, is that salary parity. San Francisco, there are a lot of salaries there, were obviously extremely high, becoming extremely competitive. The move to remote, people moving out of the area, do they continue to get paid San Fran salaries? If you hire somebody on the, East Coast versus West Coast, are they on different salaries? If you hire somebody in Australia versus the US, again, are they on different salaries? And I think that conversation is a continual one. Do you have any opinion or advice in and around that salary parity?
Yeah, look, we've certainly experienced that at Twilio. It's a really good point to discuss. And I think as a company, you need to have a policy on it. So we have, like most companies, we have different pay grades within Twilio. And if you are located in one of the cities that is deemed to have a loading on it, and San Francisco is one of those, then you can, your salary might be up to 25% higher than what it would be if you're in a different location. During COVID, of course, we had like tons of employees kind of not just flee San Francisco, but flee California. I did see, we actually had an email go out and said that your pay may be adjusted based on your location because, it was, I suppose, artificially or inflated before. We had situations where managers were not being as paid as much as people that were reporting to them because the people that were reporting to them were in San Francisco and the managers were not. So it's a tricky one. We also had, it go the other way where we actually had employees leave because their salary was adjusted when they went back to Idaho. So it's an interesting discussion. I think you have to, as a company, need to figure that out. It's easier when you're hiring someone new to go, this is the salary because you are in Denver, Colorado, or this is the salary because you're in Idaho, or you're on where I am in Lake Macquarie in New South Wales. What's harder is that adjustment from moving from, you used to be able to come into the office, but now you can just sit up there in Lake Macquarie. You don't have to come to Sydney anymore. That's the tricky conversation to have because no one wants to go backwards in salary. So when you're first hiring new people, I think that conversation can be easy, but transitioning, I think, is it's fraught. And I don't know if all of our employees were pay adjusted that went back to different regions. I think some were not. So I think it was a tricky conversation.
Yeah, very difficult conversation. And you don't want to lose a good engineer just because they've moved out and they're doing the same work, right? Correct. Their argument's going to be, I'm doing the same work. I'm you know, should be delivering the same, pay the same.
Yeah.
And I guess in Australia, where we're going to have those same conversations, I feel like we're a little bit behind in that space. But if you're hiring somebody, as you said, in Lake Macquarie or Newcastle for a Sydney-based organization that's hiring fully remotely, should they be paid Sydney wages, which are traditionally 20 to 30% higher than Newcastle?
Yeah.
Or do you pay, you know, Newcastle-based salary? So I feel like those conversations are starting to happen in Australia as well with the major capital cities, especially when you look at the East Coast. East Coast is on the same time zone. We've got three capital cities on the same time zone pretty much. So there's some interesting conversations to be had there.
Yeah, look, quite a lot of the roles that Twilio are hiring at the moment, we actually list them as like San Francisco / remote. So it's kind of a lot of these new roles that we're listing actually are optional, whether you wanted to go into the office or not. There's no doubt that we leases that we're taking on new buildings are really aimed at, I suppose, flexible working. So they're not about everyone having a dedicated seat. It's about having hot seats that you can come in and use from time to time. Because I think if we were to cater for every single employee having a seat, which is kind of, it's expensive, right? Real estate is still expensive in Sydney, but I mean, I don't know what's going to happen commercial, but you know, we currently have an office in Sydney that seats about 25, and we've got about 90 employees that I suppose are still technically based in Sydney. So that gives you a kind of an idea on the ratio of how we're factoring that in. But we can save a lot of money. And if their employees can be more productive and happier, then there's a lot of benefits for that. And honestly, our company has been much more productive, you know. And I think when I talked about those rules of engagement before, I think it's important to think about, okay, you know, do I need a Zoom call for everything? You know, can I send a Slack message or an email to get this achieved? And I think we try to take this attitude of, if there's a lot of back and forth, then jump on a Zoom call. Or if there's a lot of context that needs to be explained, then jump on a Zoom call. But to try and avoid it. And I suppose the other thing, you mentioned I've been doing remote work for a while, and I have. I think the first time I transferred out of an office and started working from home, if I was not in the mood to work, I used to just still sit at my desk. And I had to suddenly realize that there was no one looking over my shoulder. And if I wasn't in that mood, then, you know, go for a walk, take the dog for a walk, take yourself for a walk, do some exercise, go get some golf balls, whatever that is, and come back in that zone where you know you're going to be productive. Where before in an office environment, you wouldn't really do that. You wouldn't just go for a walk and go, oh, I'm not really in the mood today. But you just sit at your desk. Now that desk time is non-productive. And all it is really kind of, they're kind of vain metrics. Oh, I saw Brendan was at his desk all day today, but I didn't actually do anything because I wasn't in the right frame of mind. So that was probably the first thing that I learned from remote working was, if you're not feeling it, if you're not in that productive zone, then don't sit at your desk, go and do something else. Now, you know, I find that I'm really productive between sort of 7 and 10 in the morning, and then things seem to slow down after that. I don't know why. I am a night owl, but I'm not productive at night. So I find my brain is operating fastest early in the morning, and that's what I try and do, to take advantage of that time. And, you know, some of my work days, I'm done by 12 o'clock, by 2 o'clock. That's fine. You know, if you feel like you've been productive for those 6 hours that you put in, like that day that you were doing 2x what you normally would, that's fine. Take that afternoon off. I would say that we are going to get judged more on productivity and less on these kind of vanity metrics of, was Brendan logged into Slack all day?
Yeah. And I think they're just a carry on from, you know, was it the time when it was really about, you know, the time put in and how, as you said, the hours that you spend at your desk. It's not like roles like yours isn't a pick pack where you'll fill X amount of boxes in X amount of hours. If you do 2 really productive hours versus sitting at your desk for 8 hours unproductively, you take those two productive hours every day of the week, right?
Yeah. Look, that's a big shift in thinking for a lot of people, that they're judged purely on output and not on hours. So that's it's a tricky thing for employees to deal with and get their head around. It's a tricky thing for managers and employers as well to get their head around. And sometimes, some days I will take Fridays pretty much off, but I might do a couple of hours on a Saturday morning. So again, that flexibility and productivity, I think the trade-off's awesome, and I wouldn't kind of have it any other way. And I laugh when I think about years ago when I was, you know, I was working at Optus, and I would put my suit on at 7:30 in the morning, and I'd head on in on the bus. I'd get in there and I'd have a chat to people at the coffee machine and sit there. And then, you know, 5 o'clock, boom, you know, off I'd go. And then I wasn't online any of those hours. I was uncontactable, which is sort of a good thing. Like, you do have to choose your hours when you switch off. But that work environment from 20 years ago, it seems very distant and foreign to me now.
Yeah, back in the days where you used to be more productive if you wore a tie, right?
Yeah, wearing a tie. I mean, I used to love my tie collection. I actually threw out my last tie. I kept one, but I threw my last one out about 6 months ago because I'm really like, I'm never going to wear this tie. And I remember actually when I was at Optus, I had a meeting with a guy from Microsoft and he turned up without a tie on. And I honestly was actually offended. I was like, why is this guy not wearing a tie? Like, he's not taking me seriously. He had a jacket on still with no tie. But I look back and think, what was I thinking? What a dickhead I was.
Yeah. Present day Brendan wouldn't like old school Brendan.
Yeah.
No, I completely agree. And I feel like that people being judged and looked upon from their actual output and what they're actually producing as opposed to what they're wearing or the hours that they sit behind a desk is a good thing for both the individual and for the organization, right? As an organization, if you've got happier employees that are producing better outcomes, it's a win-win all around.
Yeah, look, one of the things that Twilio did when we first decided everyone was going to be remote, certainly for COVID, is they actually gave us $1,500 to spend on setting up our home office. So it's probably the one regret I have, because I've probably been working from home or working remote for 20 years, is that I actually didn't go out and spend that little bit of money on getting the best kit. Like the camera that I'm on now is a Logitech camera. It's $149 from Officeworks. It's HD. It's fantastic. I used to use the microphone from the MacBook. I've got an Elgato microphone there. It's about $240. Which is a more expensive mic, but I actually heard back some like webinars I'd done and there was a pronounced difference in the sound. I've got a big ass monitor here. That's $300 from Officeworks. I think it's important to set your space up. And if you think about like $1,500, right? It sounds like, wow, that's a lot of money to spend on getting your home office, right? My seat at my office would be costing that company about $700 per month. So it doesn't take very long to recoup that. And, so to spend that little bit of money on getting your employees set up in a great environment and, you know, get the best chair, get the best desk you can find, get the best camera. Like, it's not much money to get set up really, really well. I've got a laptop plugged into my monitor here. I've got that on a rising stand because that's ergonomically better, so I'm not looking down and up all the time. In fact, I'm about to buy a new chair because I think this one is not as good for my back as it could be. But I think, yeah, it's worth spending that time not only curating the tools that you've got, like the hardware, but you'll see, like, my background here is kind of a bit curated. I've got a Twilio banner. I've got some books that make me look intelligent. I think...
What is that book that you've got multiple copies of?
Oh, so that was Angel by Jason Calacanis. So Jason's probably the world's most famous angel investor. He put $100,000 into Uber and turned it into $100 million. He also invested in like Calm and Robin Hood and a couple other things. And we had some leftover books from an event we did with him in Sydney a couple of years ago. But, you know, we had one of our employees recently where I swear every time we did a call, like the camera was from his laptop. It was, you know, nasal cams. I was looking up his nose. It was like smudgy as well. And I was like, you know, I had to say, like, this is your window to the world now. Like, this is like, you know, would you turn up in dirty clothes to a meeting? Like, would you have your office, would you have your Twilio office be a mess? No, like, this is a representation of you to, you know, to customers, and it's very much your window. So I think it's important to spend that little bit of time. Look, I'm lucky. My office is in a loft above my garage. It's a separate building to the house. I've got a pretty lucky setup. Not everybody has that. Perhaps both partners are working remote, maybe there's only one home office and someone's on the kitchen table. But where possible, if you can make that effort to make that home environment or that work environment at home as good as you can make it, it's well worth spending that time and money. And for employees, I highly encourage them to just give them an allowance. Just say, look, there's $1,000. Go buy a camera you like. Go buy a nice chair. Go buy a microphone. It's not much money.
I completely agree. You spend too much time there now, right? You're spending 30 to 40 hours a week on average, some people more, some people less, but in a chair that if it's not ergonomic, you're going to have back pain. That's not going to lead to any benefits for employee or employer. And then ongoing, as you said, it's very little money in the big scheme of things, especially when you compare it to commercial real estate.
Yeah, there's a bunch of companies, if you Google them, that'll allow your employees to do like an ergonomic audit. So you go through the process and it says, you know, it asks they're really cheap. They're like $5 a month or something. And they ask people to, you know, do your wrist get sore? Is your monitor at the same level as your eyes? Where do you get pain? And it goes through, and then they'll have a list of recommendations. And then the list might be, Brendan needs a new chair and he needs a laptop riser, right? And yeah, okay, well, that's, you know, what's that? $400. Okay, cool. You know, and that recommendation goes to the manager can then approve the purchase. So there's a bunch of different tools out there now that allow people to kind of self-assess their setup at home, because in an office environment, you can control the height of the desk, you can have standing desks, you can have nice chairs, you can control every aspect of that. When people are in their house, you don't. So you need to actually give them that little bit of support, because not everybody will go out and do it by themselves. They'll just sit in an uncomfortable chair because they think that's what they have to do.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, mate. You provide some good tips there. Awesome. I don't want to take up too much of your time today, so mate, we'll wrap up just on a couple more tips. You mentioned tools. Obviously, you mentioned Slack and Zoom. Is there anything else that you found super productive for you?
Yeah, I mean, look, at Twilio, we use all the Google Suite. So it's called Google Workplace now. So things like Google Drive, I think, just make it very, very easy. If you don't want to use Zoom, I mean, Google Meet, which is their video product, is good enough, like, you know, for whatever it is, $5.99 a month per user. It's a very encompassing kind of suite of tools. Slack, I don't know if I'm the biggest lover of Slack. Shout out to Cal, the co-founder of Slack, who's a mate of mine. But, you know, I think you'll learn how to use it. We use Threads a lot. You don't want your Slack messages to be these long kind of just pages of notes. So we divide everything into topics, and then we do threads off that. So that's probably an important one. We use email a little bit internally, but mostly for external communications. And that's probably about it. I mean, I think it would vary on depending on your setup and kind of what you do. But I mean, if you were to start off with something like Google Workplace, I think that's a pretty encompassing kind of suite of tools. But again, if you can get the hardware that you need, I think everything else kind of goes from there. We use some other like note-taking tools, as well as a bunch of different ones there now. I mean, there's a tool for everything if you need, if you've got a use case for something, whether it be like Post-its or whatever. For task management, I use Trello. So Trello kind of matches the way I think with little sort of task boards. So Trello, now owned by Atlassian, I think is a great tool for that. But yeah, I think you'll find that there's industry even specific tools for pretty much everything you want to do.
Yeah, you're not wrong. Not wrong. Mate, you obviously mentioned yourself, productivity and your tips for productivity. Obviously, you've made mention of, hey, if you're not productive, get away. Anything else over and above that?
Oh, look, I think I keep telling myself this, which is ruthlessly prioritize. Because in a remote work situation, there's you can keep working constantly. It's not like at 5, you just go home and you switch off.
Yeah.
So I think ruthlessly prioritizing is just a really important thing. You can't get to everything all the time. So that's the main thing I do when I start my day, is what are the things that I need to get done today? So I think, because that to-do list is never ending, and in a work from home or remote work environment, it's hard to switch off and go, I'm drawing the line now. So that's probably the main one, is just that prioritization.
Appreciate it, mate. My last one, when it comes to that biggest challenge that we mentioned before around building a culture, is there any one tip one piece of advice that you would say in either managing people or building a culture working remotely?
Yeah, look, that's a really good question. The one thing for me is, don't underestimate the value of bringing everybody together and allowing everybody to form those kind of bonds and relationships. I've got a bunch of people in Twilio that I can call on to help me with certain things. And the only reason I'm able to do that is because, you know, I had a beer with them, or I had a lunch with them, or we stood at a trade show booth all day together. So we actually have that kind of friendship and bond. And, you know, because I'm often asking them to do things that aren't part of their daily job. So I'd say don't underestimate the value in that connective tissue, is actually what we call it in Twilio. Build that connective tissue. We've actually done some fun virtual events as well to build that. We did a pizza making course. We did a painting course. So that was all done via Zoom. It was all done via remote. Yeah. It was kind of fun. You get to learn something a little bit about not just, you know, who is Brendan Yell from a Twilio point of view, but who is he as a person.
Yeah, perfect, mate. Our last question, and I think I know the answer to this one, but your opinion on the future. Are we going fully remote, hybrid, back in the office?
Yeah, I think there's a large component of fully remote. and then a smaller component of hybrid. So I think I'm probably a fan of hybrid, but, you know, I think we're going to see office rents certainly change in price. You know, real estate in North Sydney and in Sydney specifically, in San Francisco and New York for commercial is just so expensive. And I think setting those up as flexible workspaces will definitely promote the hybrid model. But for a lot of people, fully remote is going to be the way of the future.
Perfect. I appreciate your time today.
Cool. Thanks, James. Great to chat as always.
Thanks, Ben. Cheers, mate. Bye. Thank you for listening to this episode of Remote Tech People. For all our podcast episodes, as well as job opportunities and more advice around remote working, please visit remotetechpeople.com.au.